Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Fourth and final hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game on this Tuesday afternoon. Talk a little baseball with our next guest. We've enjoyed our conversations with him. He lives here in Nashville. Guy that played at one of my rival high schools. In fact, the girl I dated in high school went to Tate's Creek, and she was probably right at the same age as Kevin Jarvis. He was at Tate's Creek. I was at Bryan Station. Best baseball player to come out of Bryan Station was probably Doug Flynn. I'm not sure what the – I guess the answer is, without a doubt, our next guest, Kevin Jarvis, the best to come out of Tate's Creek. Kevin, how you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing fantastic. Are you the best baseball player to come out from Tate's Creek High School?
We've had a couple of – John Shelby was Henry Clay. As you said, Doug Flynn was Tate's Creek. Austin Kearns was Lafayette. I think we've got about all four of the public schools in Lexington, Kentucky covered.
Wow, that's right. I forgot about Austin Kearns. Good pull by you. So with Son Bryce in the wings in tomorrow's first round of the MLB draft, how are the nerves right now for Dad?
Nerves are all right. You know, it's been. Because of the situation we find ourselves in, you know, typically you're so busy through the college season with the regular season, the conference play, the ACC or SEC conference tournaments, the NCAA bursts, the regional tournaments, the super regionals, and hopefully a College World Series, that you just got your eye on the next prize and you're moving forward and you're so consumed with, as a player and as a parent, you're consumed with that next step. And then you look up, and it's June, and the draft is around the corner. Well, we find ourselves the last 3 months with having June 10th circled on the calendar and literally nothing to occupy our minds. So it's felt like a long time coming.
Well, that's a really good point, because I guess it would be right now, this time last year, you were consumed over at the Hawk as Vanderbilt – and Duke and that incredible pitching matchup between your son and Kumar Rocker, which took place in the Super Regionals. I mean, you're right. We will be consumed with the road to Omaha, right now, and we don't have any of that, unfortunately.
Right, exactly. So, you know, in Bryce's case, he kind of made lemons out of lemonade, so to speak, and as soon as the season was canceled, he and five of his Duke teammates got in a couple different cars and left Durham, North Carolina, and traveled south to Boca Raton, Florida. And his catcher, Michael Rothenberger, who's also likely to go this week in the draft, his family lives down there. So the five Duke baseball players went down to the Rothenberger's house in South Florida and lived for 3 months and trained at an Eric Cressy facility down there, and were able to throw together and hit together and study online together and kind of have some, you know, not normalcy, but it was a lot better than being isolated by yourself, certainly.
How did they handle losing their season? You know, your son pitched a perfect game before everything came to a screeching halt. And I remember us having Tim Corbin on literally, I think, the day before they were supposed to start up conference play in the SEC, and they were supposed to host Kentucky. And then, obviously, within a 24-hour period, everything came to a screeching halt. What was that like to go through, and then the sad reality to know that they were going to lose the rest of their season?
Well, in a word, emotional. I mean, you're talking about opportunities and life experiences that you'll never get back. And for for Bryce and the Duke Blue Devil baseball team, it was, you know, a situation where his freshman and sophomore years, they had gotten to a super regional game three in each of those years and come up one game short of Omaha and trying to punch that ticket and get the Duke baseball program back at, you know, on that map in the College World Series. And they really felt like they had the horses and the roster to do it this year and get past that last super regional final. So not only everyone was distraught, no matter what team you're on or what situation you're in, but, you know, they felt like they had been working towards this for a very long time and had a good shot of accomplishing some really fun goals. But so I think having the opportunity to not be isolated and having those five teammates together and sit around the dinner table there for several weeks and talk about seasons past and seasons present and that type of thing and the situation was probably cathartic for them.
You know, to get back to what I said at the beginning, I forgot to bring this up at the beginning. I was actually talking to a good buddy of mine back in Lexington here recently, and you actually got brought up in the conversation because he played both football and baseball at Bryan Station, and I couldn't believe how just randomly we were telling stories, and I'm pretty sure, if memory serves me correct, he said this probably the most heartbreaking loss ever was in the districts to you guys, and he actually went up against you, and he was undefeated that season for Bryan Station. And I think you guys got a crazy grand slam to win it, and he said he will never, ever forget that game, and he said that you were the starter for Tate's Creek, and Chris Heiler was the starter for Bryan Station, and he said it's a game that he still thinks of. Today he has fond memories. You know, fond memories is probably not the best way to put it. He has memories.
And it's vivid memories.
Vivid and hurtful memories of that tough loss.
Well, if my memory serves correctly, that we did win the Kentucky State High School Baseball Championship that year. We were on the road, but. To Chris's point, the home run, the grand slam, actually was one of those, and this is pre-smartphone type thing. So if it was today, it would have been the Sports Center play of the day because their left fielder, the Bryan Station left fielder, was backpedaling to deep left field, and he got close to the left field fence. The ball actually hit leather and then popped out of leather, went over the fence for the game-winning grand slam.
My friend, your memory is spot on correct. It was Chris Sayer, and Chris Heiler has never let Chris Sayer ever live that down. Yes.
Well, I've often wondered if Chris Sayer recovered from that, because that was, as a high school baseball player, I don't know if it gets much more traumatic than that.
That is fantastic that you remember. Tough. That is literally what Chris Heiler was telling me, that you just walked through that play. It actually went in and out of Chris Sayer's glove and over the fence for a grand slam. You are exactly right. Well done.
Sometimes on the way to championships, you got to have crazy things happen like that. Then you start believing you're a team of destiny.
We're talking to Kevin Jarvis, longtime pitcher in the big leagues, 12 years. Spent some time as a Nashville Sound, and his son Bryce went to Brentwood Academy, and he is projected to be perhaps a first-round pick in tomorrow's Major League Baseball draft. So, Kevin, I got to know, where were you for the perfect game? Were you there in the stands, or were you following it online, watching it? How did you take that one in?
No, so both Elizabeth, my wife, and I were in Durham. We were in the stands. Interesting enough, the morning of that game, they had snowfall in Durham, and they had ice in the Durham Bulls Athletic Park, part of the stadium. So the stadium ops guys had part of the stadium roped off that you couldn't sit in. So no scouts could sit behind home plate. The parents couldn't sit. So everyone was kind of down each foul line, and it was a late February game, so it's kind of Friday night, cold temperatures. So, but Elizabeth and I typically when Bryce pitches, I typically don't sit still. I kind of move around, and I'm very mobile. And that particular night, it was so cold that Elizabeth and I kind of atypically sat next to each other and stayed put for the whole nine innings during the perfect game.
Wow, that's great. It's great that you were able to see that one. Another thing that we talked about yesterday, Kevin, is yesterday was the one-year anniversary, because it was all over social media. That's the only reason I knew. But the one-year anniversary of Kumar Rocker's no-hitter against Duke, and Bryce pitched a gem of a game in that one, and that's going to be overlooked. But I do feel like someday people, if they go along this path, someday people might look back, because I'm hoping both of these guys will end up, you know, continuing and having great careers pitching, and say, you know, I was at the game where it was Kumar Rocker and Bryce Jarvis pitching, because obviously Kumar stole the show, but Bryce pitched one heck of a game. It's not like he was, you know, it's one thing to go seven plus innings, whatever he did, and give up a run, but he was on any other night, he would have been a great story, because he was dominating a great lineup in his own way. It just was, he happened to be going up against the guy that had everything going that way that particular night. What an amazing night that was.
Well, I appreciate you saying that and recognizing Bryce's side of the perspective on it. But, I think if you look at every opposing pitcher that has come into the Hawk against Vanderbilt over the last, you know, couple years, I would put Bryce's outing up against any of them, giving up the one run and seven-plus innings with the strikeout number he had and whatnot, especially when you consider – if Duke wins that game, Duke goes to the College World Series. So that was what was on the line that night. And because Duke had won game one, and that was game two, and it was the best of three-game series. But, I think certainly both pitchers threw extremely well, and I think both pitchers have an extremely bright future, and who knows, they may meet again somewhere down the line.
Yeah, I remember Sean Kelly and David Price had a game like that in a regional, not a super regional, back in 2007. And, of course, we know Sean Kelly was the lesser known of the two back then, but he matched David Price inning for inning. And, of course, he's pitched in the big leagues for a long, long time along with David Price. So, Kevin, I want to ask you, your perspective. You broke into the major leagues in 1994. You were also still pitching in the big leagues when the labor stuff came back around and the players came to an agreement, which was a very important thing. Not to go back on strike again, to get it done was a big story at the time. So as you watch this from your perspective, what they're going through now, what goes through your mind? Are you surprised or not surprised that they're in the position they're in?
I'm frustrated just like everybody else is. Unfortunately, I'm not surprised, because I've been in a position to be behind the curtain, so to speak. I've been a player rep on a big league team multiple years. I've been in part of the negotiations for basic agreements and whatnot. And it's just, for whatever reason, for decades of kind of mistrust on both sides, they just haven't figured out how to, you read the words negotiate in good faith and this kind of, there's just all this gamesmanship and outside looking in, there's a big pot of money and a lot to gain. You know, you just want both sides to figure it out in an equitable way, but unfortunately, it just hasn't worked that way.
When you were in those shoes, you know, you're in the trenches and you're in it. Now you're removed from it. Do you look upon it? Do you look back on it differently now, or do you still feel like everything that you guys did was justified?
No, I mean, I think, like, this conversation could, you know, we could take up all day long with it. The frustrating part about it is when you hear people talk on the radio, or you read certain articles or you comment sections online nowadays, that I don't think that most people, even so-called informed people, have the entire story and perspective of that it's almost like in this particular situation that the two sides negotiated. They came up with an agreement. It's like if you go and buy a house and you agree, you sign the contract and you agree on the price of the house, and then you get to the day of the closing and you show up to sign the paperwork, and then you get to the table and like, well, you know what? We're going to change the price of the house today. So it's not going to make you feel too good. So I think that there's that side of it. There's the side of, that the value of the franchises. I just saw somewhere where, they're talking about expanding Major League Baseball, and they could sell two new franchises for $1 billion each and split the money between the other 30 teams. I think that would be a great way to recover some of this money. I think there's a lot of ways to get this done, and but having not been in the room, and I don't want to speak out of turn now because I would be doing the same thing that frustrates me is talking about it too much when I don't know all the details.
We're talking to Kevin Jarvis here on Darren Donick and Chase, and something that came up a few weeks ago. We had Tim Kirkchin on from ESPN, and this is when the process was just beginning, but he brought up a name like Tom Glavin that had gone through it, in 94 and then later on, and just had that experience and knew what the consequences were from a labor, not having labor peace, having the strike. So how much do you think the players are missing that now of not having somebody that maybe has experienced it that can advise them, hey, this is obviously it's a different situation, but advise them in a way of, hey, these are some things that you might not be able to come back from. You have to navigate this very carefully.
Well, I think experience is always valuable. Whether it's guys like Tom Glavin or, a guy like we had leading our union, Donald Fehr, having been through multiple negotiations. But I think there's culpability on all sides, probably. As frustrated and as much blame as we can throw at players and how they're not championing the game in the right way. Well, I mean, I think a similar argument can be made for, is Rob Manfred doing the right things to promote the game and grow the game. So, but to your point, I think experience is always valuable and perspective is always valuable.
Kevin, what are your thoughts on, a lot of the discussions with the minor leagues and, who knows what's going to happen as a result of this pandemic? There are so many, different leagues and teams and ways to come up through the system. Obviously your son going through the draft process and then starting his journey to hopefully eventually get to the major leagues. You remember what you went through. So when you hear of potential changes with the minors and it looking completely different than it has for so long, what are your thoughts on that?
Wow, it's a whole new world. I mean, there's so many guys. I don't have the statistics to rattle off in front of me. Maybe you do. But back when the draft even was reduced from 40 rounds to 5 rounds, which is it's going to be 5 rounds tomorrow and Thursday, reduced from 40 rounds. How many current big league 40-man players were drafted after the fifth round? And it was, like I said, it was a high number. It was a large percentage. And to your point, if we're reducing the number of minor league teams by 40 some, fewer teams, quite frankly, I mean, guys like me, I was a 21st round draft pick, fourth year senior, had graduated from Wake Forest, drafted 21st round. I signed for $1,000 and I ended up playing 16 years of professional baseball, 12 in the big leagues. I mean, my story wouldn't have happened. And there are not dozens, not hundreds, probably thousands like me over the years. That's somewhat sad because the minor leagues are kind of by definition Darwinian. It's survival of the fittest. Baseball is a game of repetition that you need to develop that skill over time and at a high level versus high level competition to kind of weed out who's going to be able to hit the 90 plus mile an hour slider on the black, or who's going to be able to locate or throw that pitch. So on a consistent basis. So I think it remains to be seen what it's going to do long term to the quality of Major League Baseball 5-10 years down the road. I don't know. I don't know the answer, but I think it's going to be different for sure.
So what's the plans for tomorrow?
Plans for tomorrow are we're going to have extended family over at the house. We're going to have some friends over. We'll have a couple different rooms with TVs. The draft's going to be broadcast on two channels simultaneously. It'll be on ESPN and the MLB Network both at the same time. We'll watch the draft. The dynamics of the way baseball, I've been in several draft rooms having worked in scouting after my playing career, so I have somewhat of a different take on it than the average dad, but it's nonetheless going to be somewhat stressful because as the draft is going on, then teams, scouting directors, general managers will call players or their advisors or whatnot and try to get a really good sense of what it's going to take to sign. Should they call that name? Should they make that draft pick? And so with only 5 minutes between picks, there are some kind of high leverage phone calls there and decisions to be made in a short amount of time.
Well, best of luck with that to you and the family. Continue to be safe. And thanks for doing this. It's going to be cool to see how it all plays out. And I'm sure we'll talk soon. Thanks for doing this.
We got a Middle Tennessee flavor to the draft with Bryce and Hassel and Martin at Vanderbilt. So we got three Middle Tennessee guys that very, very well can go in the first round. And so that's pretty cool.
No doubt. We'll be watching for sure. Thanks, Kevin, for doing this.
All right. Take care.
That's Kevin Jarvis, former big league pitcher, spent a long time in the league, Nashvillian. His son, Bryce Jarvis, expected to go in the first round of the MLB draft. We'll come back. More of Darren Donick and Chase next. Hey, don't forget, you can listen to us anywhere. Download the Game Nashville app. That's free and easy for you to do. You can enable Alexa skill, which I've got in my home all over the place, Google Home, and ask it to play 102.5 The Game, or you can live stream from our website, which is thegamenashville.com. Easy steps to listen to us anywhere, anytime. Speaking of John Hines and the Predators, hey, teams are starting to get back in the fold with small groups, right? We saw where the Titans coaches reported back to the facility this week as of yesterday. Now we're starting to see on the hockey side of things gatherings where they're going to get back in the mix as we get an inch a little bit closer to them returning to play. And we'll see how that all plays out. But that's going to take place this week, right? They're able to get back together in small groups.
Yeah, I think that's an awesome step, you know, trying to get back to play. So that's a positive and can get that process started. And I know it gets me excited. We started the show talking about a game from 3 years ago and reliving that, but hopefully here in the next couple of months, we'll actually be watching another potential run again for the Preds. So that's a great step.
We're going through all these months of, you know, looking for any kind of competition that we can find. And then if in fact, and you know, let's keep knocking on wood and all that stuff, on around August 1st, when you all of a sudden are going to have this blitz of basketball and hockey, maybe baseball, and then not long after that, football is going to crank back up. I mean, preseason football, if it stays on time, that's going to be going on in August, right? The flooding of the sports, it's going to be amazing. What are we going to do?
Sit back,
go crazy,
bask in the glory of sports returning and trying to figure out what to, there's so much going on, figure out what to talk about. You know, I mean, that's, how to balance it all, yeah. which would be great. A great problem to have.
Yes.
I welcome that with open arms.
Yes. I'm so ready for that.
By the way, we're not too far away from when we can actually start breaking down, you know, let's breaking down the Predators-Coyotes matchup, breaking down some of his matchups. I mean, that's not too far. That's not too far off.
Oh, I know.
Which, how cool will that be?
It'll be fun, and I actually just got told that Ryan and I are going to talk to Nick Bonino tomorrow at 9:30, so that'll be neat to, I mean, I guess at least ask him about it. It's a long way off, but it's inching closer and closer to that point of we'll, you know, start having people on from Arizona and trying to relearn what the what they were like and what the seasons have looked like. I mean, it's almost like starting over because I don't really know how much you can take away from what happened before this point because they've been off for so long. But I welcome those days.
I'm going to give you something to ask Nick Bonino.
Okay.
Tomorrow. Okay.
Okay.
There is a new cooking series called Skates and Plates that is going to feature a celebrity chef with an NHL player. And the first episode is set to air tomorrow, ironically.
Yep.
Tomorrow on NBC Sports Network and Sportsnet, it's going to be at 3 o'clock in the afternoon our time. And then NHL Network will air the same episode on Thursday night at 8:30. The first episode will include a chef that I'm not going to try to say his name because I'm going to mess it up. And
Nick
your guest,
Bonino.
Nick Bonino.
Yeah, that's why we're having him on.
Huh?
That's why we're having him on.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, did you go through NBC Sports Network?
That's what's no, we went through the Preds, but that's what started this whole conversation.
Oh, yeah.
So
this chef is a big chef. He's got a restaurant out in Los Angeles. But I guess the net episode two will be Rangers defenseman Jacob Trouba. But Nick Bonino will be the first installment of Skates and Plates.
Yeah, it'll be good stuff. I'm excited about it. So it'll be good to talk to Nick because it's been a while, obviously, since we've talked to him.
And we've heard in the past that he likes to cook.
Yeah. Yeah, he has told us that before, so I think,
a lot of his teammates said, I would like to be quarantined with Nick Bonino.
Because of his cooking. Yeah. That's exactly right. It's good. It's good to see Nick Bonino doing that because he's got the personality. He's always been more of a reserved guy. He'll do interviews, but he's always been more on private reserve type, and I'm glad he's got a personality. His player, you know, his teammates in the room, they know it. You know, they know what his personality is like. He's a big part of that room. He's a big part of the leadership in that room. But you know, more on the private side of things. Like I said, he'll do interviews, but I'm not going to say he's exactly running to go do them because he likes to be more on the private side. I'm glad that he's doing stuff like this because he has the personality to do it. We've seen him pull the pranks, right, on his teammates, which are fun.
Oh, yeah. He's shown that side.
And I've always said he should do more of that stuff, but he's someone that wasn't searching for the spotlight. But I'm glad that he's a part of this. This would be a neat show. I'll watch it tomorrow for sure.
Yeah, so will I. Think it'll be good. Nice to see some different, you know, different things, and as hockey inches closer and closer to returning, I think this will get people excited to, even though they're not on the ice, but you get to see some of the personalities, like you were saying, of the players, and Nick Bonino will be a good one, so looking forward to it.
Another one that's inching a little bit closer is MLS, right? As Nashville SC, they've been on the field basically while we're on the air, getting together and their agreement, and we've talked so much today about, you know, where Major League Baseball is, but it's interesting because MLS was going down a pretty scary road for a while, and it's like, are they really going to get locked out during these times? Really? Are we really throwing out the word lockout in these times? But MLS, they came to an agreement, and they're amidst their return to play. Nashville SC had recorded two games before everything came to a screeching halt in their season. One game at home, we know, at Nissan Stadium. The other one was out in Seattle, and they were prepared. Ironically, their next game was going to be in Toronto, exactly where the Predators were when everything came to a screeching halt. So both hockey and soccer were supposed to be playing a game in Toronto when everything came to a screeching halt. But when you look at the player agreement on the MLS side compared to baseball, what do you think?
Well, it number one, it illustrates the leverage that the players in soccer felt like they had compared to baseball. And it's not the same. But at the same time, I also commend the Major League Soccer players for recognizing in the universe where they stood and taking what they could get. And they're not happy. They've made no secret about they didn't like how they were treated and they didn't like how this turned out. They had some money that, you know, I don't have all the details. I wasn't following it closely at the time, but apparently they were on the verge because the league was really flourishing before this happened. I mean, we know Nashville is entering into this thing. You know, they had this awesome following. They were off to about as good a start in terms of following as you could get, and it's only going to get better. And then this hits. And even though the MLS has increased its profile, I think, with their national television contract, the dollars that they're getting are nowhere near what some of the other sports get. So they've got to have the gate. The gate is so important to them. So they were in a tough dilemma. And so basically what the owners did was say, all right, if you guys want to get paid this year, this is what we can give you. And if you don't take it, we're going to lock you out. And the players felt, you know, you can imagine how you would feel if you're a player there, but they took the deal. And so I admire that they felt it was important enough to play. And so they're going to go. They're practicing now, and they're going to play in Orlando if all goes according to plan. And we'll see if the league can recover and the players will end up gaining down the road for having taken this in the short term. But I just I wonder if there's any single baseball player that has watched that one and at least made any comparison just for perspective purposes.
Yeah, well, and I think the difference too, I mean, like you were saying, Willie, MLS is very healthy. I mean, they got four teams that haven't even started play yet that they've granted expansion franchises to. Nashville just started. Cincinnati still fairly new. I know they added a second team in L.A. a couple of years ago. So the league is growing, and I think they recognize, and this is the difference, this is baseball and the baseball players thinking, oh, yeah, we've been around a long time. We'll get through this. I mean, we're going to fight amongst each other and figure this out eventually, but fans will come back. Soccer at least recognize, hey, we're 25 years in as a league. We're very healthy. We're expanding left and right. We can't stop this momentum. So, yes, there was the threat of a lockout, but they all recognize the importance of getting this done and getting it done fast so they could get back to playing and not have any type of labor disagreement that would stop that momentum. So that's the biggest difference, in my opinion, between what's happening between, you know, the soccer, the MLS players and MLS and then baseball and the players, because there's just more of a recognition of how important it was to get back to play.
Why do we
and
think
ultimately
this...
the league has to be healthy or else you're not going to have a league,
yeah,
right? It's as you were saying, they're just building the foundation. And this is going to be tough for them to bounce back and get back to where they were and then continue to grow, which I think there's still a lot of growth potential if we can get through this, but it's going to be slowed down for a good while here. So I don't know if the players really felt like they had a choice, but I know they're just reading some of the reactions from the players. And I saw some of the Nashville players on some of the TV shows last night saying, you know, they made no bones about it. Hey, we took the deal, but we weren't happy about it.
What is it going to take for them to get perspective and get with the times more, the sport that the three of us really enjoy and root for, but just seems to always be behind on everything? Why is that? Why are they always behind? It's like the whole netting thing. I mean, we talked about netting in that sport for a long, long time. Like, how many more articles had to be written of people getting badly hurt. I mean badly hurt in the stands before baseball finally woke up and said, let's see. Our fans are like in danger, like in certain areas of the ball field. They're in like real danger. Like there's a whole lot of data that shows us that. And finally, it took, I mean, we were talking about this a long, long time ago, and there have been articles written for years and years and years. This is just yet again just one example of so many. Why does it seem like they're always so far behind? In other words, they're really never proactive.
Yeah.
They're always reactive. Why?
I have a thought on that. Okay. I'll relate it this way. I think we have all known that person that has been around a long time, been around the company or just been around in general, but just they're very set in their ways and they've done a lot of good. So let's say it's somebody you work with that they're a legend in the company and they've worked their way up and they've done it a certain way, but they've never changed and they've looked at it as, well, it's always worked the way that I've done it. So why should I listen to you young people coming in and telling me how to change my ways? And they're just so reluctant to change. I think baseball can be viewed that way.
One person, Chase, and no, I agree with you, but this is an entire organization. How can that many people have that mentality?
Because they've been around. I mean, baseball has been around the longest. I mean, Major League Baseball, and they've just looked at it as we're the granddaddy and we're America's pastime and people are still going to show up and – we don't need to do what the other leagues have done. I mean, we don't need to change. I honestly think, yes, the people have changed within it, but that's just kind of the mindset that they've had, that it's just the old way of thinking, and it took them forever just to get replay. And Willie, I know that you're a purist, and I don't fault you for that, and I know there are a lot of people that still haven't embraced replay, but I know I look at it and go, why would you not want to get it right? Just because you haven't done it this way for years and years and years doesn't mean that it's wrong. So I just think it's that mindset and that attitude.
I think there's a lot of things that they could be doing to be creative, especially in a season like this. If you did want to tinker with changes in the game, because you might have the purists say, okay, you know, just try it this year and then we'll see how it looks. And because this year is different than any other year, and then decide whether you want to do it going forward. But they can't even get to that because we're talking about all the financial stuff. There's just that deep rooted. You could tell it with Kevin Jarvis. I mean, he's been through those things, right? As a player, there's just a mistrust. There is a lack of belief, lack of partnership between the two sides. And it is deep rooted and it goes back for a long, long time. And it's really unfortunate because right now it's hurting because there's a failure to see the perspective. You know, the way it is the way it is. That's one thing. But under the circumstances now, if there's ever a time to say this is bigger than us, this is so important for the game, for the country, that we've got to meet in the middle somewhere. But I'm talking about both sides, not just the players, but the owners as well. And Kevin made a great point about the values of the franchises. If the value of the franchise, you know, maybe you lose a lot of money this year and the value of your franchise goes down from $1 billion to $950 million, aren't you still all right? You know, you're still going to be all right, you know, even if you got to pay the players a few more million bucks. I mean, there's got to be some middle ground here that's fairly simple. It's not that if you listen to all the people that have been following this, and God bless them, you know, for following the blow-by-blow of all these dollars, because the fans just are just waiting for one thing. When are you playing? Are you playing? Do you have an agreement or do you not have an agreement? But the people that are following it, they're telling you that, relatively speaking, it's just, you know, it's just a few million dollars per team that they're apart. And over the big, long haul of things, that's really not that much money to get a deal done.
How can you talk about, you know, a country changing and relationships changing in baseball? You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to hear from baseball about that. It's like, how about you fix within? How about you change within? How about your relationships change within before you, you know? I don't want to hear messages from your sport right now. You know, how about you start right. within? Look in the mirror. How about you start with that change? I mean, it's like you keep saying, and I'm not disagreeing with you. This deep seated, this deep rooted, you know, long time. This is the way. Well, how about you change with the times, like this country is trying to change? How about you do that? How about you work around that, work with that, and work to fix that, rather than just keep saying, "Well, we've never gotten along, and I guess we'll just never will." Well, really? So that's the mentality? That's great. That's fantastic. Meanwhile, the country's trying to take a different approach. But I'm glad you've just decided, well, that's just the way it's always been. And, gosh, we just can't ever seem to get on the same page. Oh, okay. That's great. Great Major League Baseball.
And also, Kevin makes a very valid point that none of us, even the people that are following it closely, none of us know all the details of what really is being discussed behind closed doors. And that is true, but it still kind of rings hollow to everybody on the outside. And that is the reality, right? They don't care about that.
No, because we'll never have that access.
The perception is important.
Yes.
And right now the perception is ugly. Now, if they came up with how great would it be if they announced an agreement tomorrow as the draft is starting? I think a lot of this would be forgotten. If they come out and they say, we're going to play 77 games or whatever they come up with, and here's where the two sides met in the middle. We won't even care what the percentages are. The two sides met in the middle. We're going to play 77 games. That's as most as we can get in there, and everybody's happy. Then, you know, by the end of the fall, hopefully we won't even remember how ugly it was and what almost turned into something ugly. But
I don't think we're going to forget, but it would go a long ways, to your point.
It would help a lot. We'd forget to a degree.
We'll come back and wrap up Tuesday's show. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hey, you can stop by and eat with us. Game partner, eat, dine in, or carry out. And get a sticker from a restaurant and add it to your card. You can take a picture and post it on Twitter using the hashtag EatWithUs. Tag us at 102.5 The Game, the Preds, at Preds NHL. And the restaurant, secure 8 stickers, receive a Predators prize pack, secure all 16 stickers, and you can receive a Predators player autographed puck. How about that? You can see participating restaurants, and to print out the card, you just go to our website, thegamenashville.com. Cool little promotion as we're trying to help out the restaurant business. I've seen a strong push today on social media to help out Roman Josi for the Norris Trophy, huh? Roman or Josi for Norris. And when you just look, it looks like a two-man race between Carlson and Josi. And
yeah,
I think
no
obviously
question.
In this market, there is a strong, strong push for Predators captain Roman Josi.
Well, I really felt like when we were in Toronto and Nashville is going through Toronto, they had just been to Montreal. You know, that's when Roman Josi's the numbers that he had compiled, I think, were really starting to get the attention of people. And then you have a chance to showcase yourself in front of a lot of that national media up in Canada that is so important. I think that's where he was going to take full control of it. And then all of a sudden, this happens. But I think all that to be said, I do think that the research that a lot of the writers did, when you look at the sort of the modern younger writers that pay attention to the stats below goals, assists, points, plus minus, the traditional stats, Josi was starting to win the argument hands down. But there are a lot of older writers that don't pay as much attention to those stats and are much more inclined to vote based on how's a guy's team doing? How many goals the guy's at? Just, you know, all of some of the intangibles and simplifying things.
Well, Roman's
like
got
Darren,
more goals.
Yeah,
so if that's
yeah,
what
I
they're
know.
Doing, then.
I know, but Carlson has more points, right?
Yep.
And his team is better. So sometimes it's like, well, his team's better. He's got the most points. Let's go with it. It's like the one loss record for a baseball pitcher trying to win the Cy Young. There was a time where maybe your ERA wasn't all that great, but if you were 21-9, you were right there. If you didn't win it, you know, that meant a lot more than it does now, right? Where you can be like Jacob deGrom and what was he, 11-9 or maybe even 10-9, and he won the Cy Young because his numbers were so good and the things that were out of control, out of his control, he couldn't, you know, people look at it differently for better or worse. So I think that's going to be where it's won and lost for Roman Yossi. And let's look at the immortal words of Hal Gill. Okay, who is I love Hal's perspective because he's coming around. He understands that the analytics are important, but he still clings to his view of the game as more important, how the game is observed and what happens when you watch. And so he puts Roman Yossi tops in his mind in these categories: EBT, GID, and DD. EBT being the eyeball test, GID being a get it done activity, and DD defensive dominance. So those are the stats he cares about.
Thank gosh you EBT, clarified, because I was nervous with what those stood for. So thank you for
EBT eyeball test, GID get it done activity, which that's my favorite one, and the DD defensive dominance. In other words, Hal is going to rely on his observations, especially for a defenseman, right? Because it's hard to equate how good does a guy defend. I can sit there and go, this guy's a great defenseman. He really knows how to stop you. And look at another guy going, well, I don't think he's as good. But the stats, you can't really get as many of those, right? Now, the analytics is getting there with those, and Yossi grades out very well. I think the consensus is Yossi is a better defensive player than John Carlson.
Yeah, and I think that that's another thing that people lose sight of is it's a defensive award. I know the points are important, and that's going to factor in, but you also have to look at defense, which is harder to analyze.
Of the six categories, quickly, which one do you deem the one that matters the least? Points, goals, assists, plus minus, time on ice, or shots? Which one do you say has the least value, in your opinion, quickly?
I think it's an interesting question. I would say plus minus has become less important. To me, that's least significant.
I would have,
but once upon a time, that would not have been the case.
I would say if I was looking for something else, I would say shots. Like that to me, that's probably. I know plus. If I was trying to come up with a different answer, I knew most people would probably go plus minus, but I'd probably throw shots in there too. Anyway, that will do it for us today. Good show as always. Everybody have a great rest of your Tuesday. Be safe, because we want you back with us tomorrow morning starting at 10 a.m. We'll see you then.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino.